Ever heard about like a tiny little design flaw that ends up costing a company millions?
Oh, yeah.
Well, in the world of injection molding, something as simple as feed position can make or break a product.
Oh, for sure.
You guys asked us for a deep dive into optimizing feed position, so get ready because it's way more than just like a setting on a machine. We're going to unpack some insights from this article called What are the best strategies to optimize feed position in injection molding?
This is cool. It's fascinating how feed position really touches like every stage of the whole process,
Okay.
from that initial product design right through to how the mold's crafted, and even down to like those nitty-gritty settings when you're actually doing the production.
So it's not just about like where you squirt the plastic in.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Imagine this: you're designing a sleek, brand new phone case.
Yeah, right.
You got those like smooth curves, that perfect fit for the phone, but you totally overlooked how that plastic will actually flow during the molding process. Suddenly, you've got weak spots, uneven cooling, and a whole lot of wasted plastic scrap, all because the feed position wasn't optimized right from the beginning. Costly mistake.
Yeah, that's a visual I won't forget. So walk me through this. Where do we even begin with this whole feed position optimization thing?
Well, the journey really starts with the product design itself. And here's a golden rule. Uniform wall thickness is absolutely crucial. Think of it kind of like plumbing, right?
Okay.
You don't want those sudden changes in the pipe diameter
Right.
because it creates those pressure differences and that turbulent flow. Same kind of goes for molten plastic.
So if I have a part with like a thick section that suddenly goes to a thin one, that's trouble.
Precisely. You're setting yourself up for what we call sink marks.
Oh no.
The thicker area cools slower, so it creates a vacuum that pulls the surface inward as the thinner part solidifies.
Ah.
Result: a super unsightly blemish and a potentially weakened product. Plus, then you've got that uneven cooling, which can totally warp the entire part and throw off your dimensions.
Yikes, that's a chain reaction I don't want to start. But the article mentions gradual transitions can solve this. Is that like adding like a slope between those thick and thin sections?
Exactly. By gradually transitioning that wall thickness, you're ensuring that the molten plastic will flow smoothly, consistent pressure throughout.
Okay.
No sudden bottlenecks, no drastic temperature differences, and a much, much happier end product.
Makes total sense. And thinking about this right in the design phase saves a lot of headaches later. Speaking of which, the article also mentions that the part's shape can impact feed position. So it's not just about wall thickness, right?
Absolutely. Imagine trying to fill a mold with a really deep, narrow cavity.
Hmm.
If your feed point is far away, well, the plastic might solidify before it even reaches those deep recesses.
Ah.
Result: incomplete filling, weak points, and another trip back to that drawing board.
So we're talking like strategic placement of the feed, almost like we're playing chess.
That's a great way to put it. You need to visualize how that molten plastic is going to behave and position your feed point in a way that ensures complete and uniform filling, even in those tricky spots.
Interesting.
You know, for instance, if you've got a component with a deep cavity, putting the feed point close by ensures that those intricate details get filled in properly before that plastic cools.
Clever. It's like choosing the perfect entry point to navigate a complex maze. The article also briefly mentions draft angles and ribs as design factors. What's the deal with those?
Those are essential for a smooth manufacturing process. Draft angles, those slight tapers on the part's side, ensure it'll come out of the mold.
Gotcha.
Without them, you risk damaging the part.
During ejection.
Right. Ribs, on the other hand, add that strength and rigidity,
Mm-hmm.
especially important for thin wall designs.
So seemingly small details can have big consequences down the road, like a chain reaction.
You're spot on. And by incorporating these considerations during the design phase, you're not just optimizing the feed position, you're optimizing the whole injection molding process.
Okay, I'm sold on the importance of design. But once we've got our perfectly designed part, what's next on this feed position optimization journey?
That's where we step into the world of mold design, the stage where those designs come to life. And that's where things get really interesting. Mold design is where the rubber meets the road, so to speak. It's where we take those carefully considered designs and turn them into a physical mold that can actually produce, like, high-quality parts, cycle after cycle.
I'm picturing those massive metal molds that I've seen in factories. So much precision goes into making them.
Absolutely. And a key element of mold design, especially in the context of feed position, is the gate.
Oh, the gate.
The entry point for that molten plastic.
Right. The article mentioned gate types being a game changer. I'd love to go a little bit beyond just knowing the basic types.
Sure. It's not a one-size-fits-all situation. Let's say you're making those sleek phone cases that we talked about earlier.
Okay.
A side gate, while it's super simple and cost-effective, would leave a visible mark right on the edge. Not very appealing for a high-end product.
So that's where those point gates come in, right? Yeah. Smaller mark, much better aesthetics.
Exactly. But there's a trade-off. Point gates can create higher shear stresses in the melt as it flows through that tiny opening.
Oh, okay.
For some materials, it's not a big deal. But for others, it can lead to degradation, affecting the part's strength, and even causing discoloration.
So it's not just about looks. We need to consider how the gate type affects the material itself.
Precisely. Now, if you absolutely need that invisible gate mark, like on a high-gloss automotive part, that's when you might want to consider a latent gate.
Interesting.
They're designed to break away cleanly during ejection, leaving a flawless surface.
Sounds like magic. I bet those come with a pretty hefty price tag, though.
They do tend to be more complex to design and manufacture. Plus, they require precise control over the mold's movements during ejection. Not every production setup can handle that complexity.
That makes sense. It's like each gate type has its own, like, personality, its strengths and weaknesses.
Exactly. And choosing the right one comes down to understanding your product requirements,
right,
the material properties, and even the production volumes that you're aiming for.
Gotcha. Okay, gates are clearly more nuanced than I realize. What else do we need to consider in this mold design phase?
Well, once that molten plastic enters through the gate, it needs a way to reach those intricate cavities.
Right.
That's where the runner system comes into play. It's a network of channels that efficiently distribute that melt.
It's like the highway system for molten plastic. But the article briefly mentioned runner cross-section impacting flow. I'm curious to know more about that.
Think of it this way. A circular runner offers the least resistance to flow. It's like the ideal scenario.
Okay.
But machining those perfectly round channels is complex and expensive, especially for multi-cavity molds.
But there are compromises here, too.
Often, yes. A trapezoidal cross-section is way easier to machine, so it's more common.
Hmm.
But you do get slightly higher pressure loss and a bit more shear stress on that melt compared to a circular runner.
So another balancing act. Is there a way to mitigate those downsides at all?
Absolutely. By carefully designing that runner layout and sizing those channels appropriately, you can really minimize that pressure loss and ensure even flow distribution, even with the trapezoidal cross-section.
It's amazing how much thought goes into what seem like really simple details.
Every detail matters in mold design. And speaking of crucial details, we can't forget about the cooling system.
Ah, yes, the cooling system.
It's often overlooked, but it plays a vital role in feed position optimization.
The unsung hero. I'm ready to sing its praises.
Imagine this. You've got your perfectly designed part, the ideal gate and runner system, but your mold isn't cooling evenly.
Okay.
Some areas are solidifying too quickly, while others are lagging behind. Well, this can lead to warping, internal stresses, and those dreaded sink marks, even with, like, a perfect feed position.
So we're back to that even cooling thing being super crucial, just like with wall thickness.
Exactly. And that's where a well-designed cooling system really shines. Strategic placement of those cooling channels, especially near the gate and those thicker sections, ensures that the mold maintains a consistent temperature throughout the entire cycle.
It's like having a, like, high-tech AC system, but for the mold itself.
That's a great way to put it. But it's not just about placement. The material of those cooling channels matters, too.
Right.
Materials with high thermal conductivity, like copper alloys, can dissipate heat much faster than steel. Leads to shorter cycle times and more efficient production.
So it's another layer of optimization going beyond the mold itself.
Precisely. And here's where it gets really interesting. We can even use different cooling channel designs.
Oh, wow.
Baffles, bubblers, conformal cooling, all to really fine-tune that cooling process and achieve those optimal results for different part geometries.
Wow, it's like there's a whole science dedicated to just mold cooling.
It's a fascinating field, full of clever solutions and continuous innovation.
I'm starting to see why mold design is so crucial to feed position optimization.
And when we combine these mold design considerations mm-hmm. with those smart product design choices mm-hmm. we talked about earlier, well, that's when the magic really happens.
I can't wait to hear about that magic. But before we move on, is there anything else we should know about this mold design stage? So we talked about designing the part with feed position in mind. Then we talked about actually crafting the mold itself to ensure that smooth flow. But there's a third piece of this puzzle, right?
Yes.
Those process parameters that actually control how that plastic gets injected.
You're absolutely right. Think of it this way. We've built that perfect racetrack and fine-tuned our car, but now it's time to actually drive it.
Okay.
Process parameters are how we control the speed, the pressure, and even the temperature during the injection molding process.
Okay, so I'm ready to get behind the wheel.
Right.
What's the first parameter we need to, like, master?
Let's start with injection speed. This is how fast we're pushing that molten plastic into the mold. Now, you might think faster is always better.
Right.
Get that mold filled ASAP and move on to the next part. But it's not that simple.
Yeah, there's always a catch in injection molding.
You're catching on. Too much speed can create problems, like jetting.
Oh, okay.
Where the plastic squirts out in this messy, uncontrolled way, leaving those ugly streaks on your part.
Right, right.
Plus, that high speed can actually cause turbulence in the melt, leading to weak spots and inconsistent cooling.
So it's a delicate balance. How do we find that sweet spot, then, for injection speed?
Well, it depends on a few factors.
Right.
The material's viscosity, the geometry of the part, and all those carefully chosen gate and runner dimensions. For example, a thin-walled part with some really intricate details.
Yeah.
Might need a faster injection speed just to make sure it's filled completely before the plastic starts to solidify. But a thick-walled part, maybe it's got a large gate, might benefit from a slower, more controlled injection. That avoids those internal stresses and defects.
This is about understanding how those factors play together, then.
Exactly. And that's where experience and experimentation come in.
Yeah.
Each material and each design, they're going to have their own, like, optimal injection speed range. And sometimes finding it just takes a little bit of trial and error. But once you nail it, you're going to be rewarded with some seriously consistent high-quality parts.
This is fascinating. Okay, injection speed, check. What's next on our parameter checklist, then?
Next up, we got injection pressure. The force that we use to push that molten plastic all the way through the mold. It's what makes sure that every nook and cranny gets completely filled.
So if injection speed is like the pace, then injection pressure is the muscle.
That's a great analogy. And just like with speed, there's an art to finding that right pressure. Too low. And you risk short shots.
Right.
Where the mold doesn't fill completely. Too high. And you can overpack the mold, creating so much stress on that part that it could warp, or you could even damage the mold itself.
Another balancing act. What factors influence our injection pressure choices, then?
The part's geometry plays a big role. A long, thin part. It's going to require higher pressure to make sure that that melt reaches the far end before it solidifies.
Right.
The material's viscosity is crucial, too. Think about it. A thick, viscous material. Well, it needs way more pressure to flow right compared to a thinner one.
So we're constantly adjusting these parameters based on the specifics of what we're working with.
Absolutely. And it's not even just about setting the right pressure at the beginning of the injection.
Yeah.
We can also tweak that pressure profile throughout the whole cycle.
Yeah.
Using techniques like hold pressure, pack pressure, to fine-tune that filling process.
It's like we're conducting this symphony of pressure almost, timing everything perfectly for this flawless performance. Okay, two parameters down. What's that final piece of this process parameter puzzle?
Mold temperature.
Okay.
This might seem like kind of a passive factor,
yeah,
but it has a big impact on how that plastic behaves inside the mold.
Right, we talked about mold cooling being important. Why is that actual mold temperature so crucial?
Okay, imagine pouring hot syrup into a cold pan.
Yeah.
It thickens up super fast, right?
Yeah, it does.
Same with plastic. A cold mold causes that plastic to solidify super quickly, which can lead to incomplete filling, those short shots, and all sorts of flow-related defects.
So a warmer mold then equals better flow, happier parts.
Generally, yes. But there's always trade-offs.
Right, of course.
A higher mold temp means longer cooling times, which can really slow down your whole production cycle. Plus, some materials, they're just really sensitive to high temps.
Yeah, I can see that.
They can degrade or discolor if the mold is too hot.
I'm seeing a pattern here. Finding that perfect balance. It's key.
You got it.
But how do we know what temperature is just right?
Again, it all comes back to the material, the part's geometry, and what you want to achieve. Say, you're going for that high gloss finish.
Right.
Well, you might need a warmer mold to make sure you get that smooth, mirror-like surface.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're making a precision part with some really tight tolerances,
right,
you might need a cooler mold to minimize shrinkage and make sure you hit all those dimensions.
It's like we're juggling all these factors and we're constantly adjusting, fine-tuning to get that perfect outcome.
That's exactly it. And that's what makes injection molding both challenging and super rewarding. It's a process that demands precision, understanding, and I think a little bit of artistry too.
This has been an amazing deep dive into the world of feed position optimization. I feel like we went from the basics of design to the intricacies of mold creation and this super fine-tuning of process parameters. What a journey.
It really has been. It's been a pleasure exploring this with you. I hope our listeners are walking away feeling equipped to tackle their own challenges in injection molding with a newfound understanding of just how important feed position optimization is to their success.
I have no doubt they do. But before we wrap up, is there anything else you wanted to emphasize about this topic?
I think the key takeaway is that feed position optimization, it's not a one-time task. It's this ongoing process, continuous improvement. As you get more experience with different materials, designs, and processes, you're going to keep refining your approach, always looking for that perfect balance, quality, efficiency, and innovation.
It's a journey then, not the destination. And with that insightful thought, we're going to wrap up our deep dive on injection molding feed position optimization. Thanks for joining us.